You're listening to Sports Connections with David Smale, the show that brings you a fun and intimate look into connections throughout sports. Now here's your host, David Smale.
Justin Adams got involved in sports broadcasting from the other end of the microphone, a tight end for the Colorado Buffaloes football team from 2004 to 2006. Pro football wasn't in his future, but he caught the itch to stay involved in sports as a writer, behind the microphone, and even in front of the camera. He is one of the only African-American play-by-play announcers working for the Pac-12 Network, broadcasting women's soccer and women's lacrosse. He's also a news and sports anchor for the CBS affiliate in his native Denver, and he's the play-by-play voice of the Regis College Rangers. An excellent writer, his Sports Spectrum feature on Philadelphia Eagles star Zach Ertz has had more than 10 million views on Facebook. Justin, welcome to Sports Connections.
David, thank you so much for having me. We've been friends for a while, so it's great to be on your podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Just let's start with talking about your football playing career. How good were you? Chance to pat yourself on the back.
Well, you know, I would love to pat myself on the back. I wasn't one of those guys who put up gaudy stats. More like no stats, but I was there.
That's not quite gaudy.
Well, to be very honest, you know, I came into the University of Colorado as a walk-on. And when I left high school, I had three catches for 50 yards and one touchdown. So definitely didn't put up a lot. But one thing that did sustain me as a player was I was a great blocker. I love blocking. I love putting my nose into somebody's chest, you know, and drive blocking or whatever it is. So that's what really helped me out. And I was very undersized when I got up to see you walked on there. I think I was 215. You know, David, when you're playing football, if you're trying to play tight end at the Division I level and you're and soaking wet, you're 215, you might need to eat something, okay? And so took me 2 years, redshirted my first year, and it took me 2 years to get on the field, and I played special teams, and that's what I got on the field my third year. And that really was my goal. My goal was I wanted to touch the field at Folsom Field. I did that my redshirt sophomore year. After that, you know, I was very happy about my career, but I had to make a decision. And there's a lot of guys who have to make this decision in college. Do I continue to pursue playing football? When I really started to get it, I felt I was a D1 player. I really started to understand what it took. Or do I go into journalism? And I just remember saying, I came here for a degree. I didn't come here to play football. Yeah. So that's when I made that tough decision to say, hey, I'm going to go and, you know, give it up for football, retire from that, but I'm going to go into journalism, man. It's worked out well so far.
So you knew, even when you were playing, you knew that that was something that you wanted to do on a long-term basis, be a part of the media.
100%. I mean, I grew up, when I was 6 years old, I remember 1992 NBA Finals, and I remember Michael Jordan playing against the Portland Trailblazers in game one, hitting three-pointer after three-pointer after three-pointer. And it was weird because something in me knew I was never going to be MJ. At 6 years old, I knew I was never going to be him. It's probably a good thing because I know that now too, right? Yeah. But I knew that whoever was that guy who made the call on that play, when he kept hitting those threes, that will live on forever. That was Marv Albert.
Right.
And so for me, at that time, I said, I want to be that guy who is attached with a memory that will go on for the rest of time. And so that's what I wanted to do.
It's interesting. I probably am the only first grader who knew what this title meant. But when I was in first grade, you know, everybody, what do you want to be? Firefighter, policeman, teacher, whatever. I said, I want to be press secretary to the president. I have no idea how I knew that, but I thought you're right there in the middle of the action all the time. And you're not responsible for the decisions if they go bad, but you're in it the whole time. So you knew you wanted to do something that would stick around for a while, but you knew that you weren't necessarily the star. You could just be part of it.
Yeah. You just want to be part of the story. Because I didn't know about all the different things you had to do to play, you know, in college or whatnot. You know, and even now, as I look back, I'm like, man, I could have did so many other things to make myself a better player. But now on the other side of the coin, it has helped me out so much, not only just to be able to talk about the game, but to be able to tell different stories because I've been in the locker room. I know what guys are going through. I know that there are guys who just don't care about the game night and day. They have other things to deal with, whether it's class, whether it's, you know, girlfriends, whether it's family issues or different things like that. So it's always great to be able to bring those up as well.
And it's interesting, Justin, because, you know, there are there is that widespread of level of interest or level of commitment with the superstar athlete on down to the walk-on. And the superstar athlete who also has that drive to do whatever is necessary, that's how you get the MJ. I was the one with no talent who didn't have the commitment either. So I rarely sniffed any of the athletic fields in high school, much less being able to play in college. But I still have fun writing about it. So
yeah,
you know, we each have our niche, right?
That's right. We all have the little things we like to do. Yeah.
Now you have been a writer. That's how I first got to know you. You've been a radio host. You've been a play-by-play guy, and you're a television anchor. Talk about what you like with each one, and then I've got a follow-up for you that's related to that directly.
I love that. And, you know, you got four different things out there, right? Number one, the overarching thing, just to continue or just to get started, is telling stories. If you could tell stories, you'll be in this business forever. One thing a mentor of mine told me as we start off with writing is that if you could write, you will always have a position somewhere. And that is one of the most underutilized pieces in this business is writing. Is really being able to not just put a sentence together, but to be able to put a thought together, to be able to truly tell a story and to use your adjectives and different verbs and how can you put them together in order to get that done. So that writing perspective is huge. And I got to give you a shout out too. I'll say this on the podcast. I remember there was one time I sent in like five different articles or whatever. And I just, in many respects, kind of copied and pasted from something else. And I was like, oh, David, he'll go and editing them up. And you sent me an email back. You're like, what is this? And I was like, oh, well, you're the guy who added them up, right? Like, what do you mean? What is this? Like, you know, it's your job, essentially. And you're like, no, I'm not going to do that. And what's interesting about that was it taught me that whenever I send off anything, let alone publish anything, whatever you send off to somebody else, even if it's for them to check it and proofread it, you need to make sure that it's always your best and you're not relying on someone else to do your job. And that type of attitude has always stuck with me. So I thank you for that, number one, but it's always something you gotta make sure that it sticks with. From the aspect of talking, of being on radio, I've been on both sides of the coin. I've been a radio host. I've been a co-host. So when you're driving, it's really, you have to know where you're going next.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to storytelling. Where do you want to go next? What are you trying to let not only the listener know, but if you're working with somebody else, how are you trying to set them up so that they could sound their best? It's kind of like a point guard, right?
Right, exactly.
Really just a point guard, you know? And more like the traditional point guard, not like the Russell Westbrooks of the day.
Right.
Really just setting somebody up. You're not looking to score yourself. And it's different when you're doing it by yourself too. You got to set yourself up and be sure to tell the story. So
that
perspective I love with radio. TV is a different animal. I love people being able to see me. But you have to be able to love the camera, and thankfully the camera loves me too. I just have a personality. If you can't tell that already, I have that.
Yeah.
And I just love being able to make people smile. I want to bring an energy to it. One of the things that I don't like that I hear a lot what people say about local news is it's negative and this, that, and the other. And I always feel bad. If I'm giving you a sports segment for 3.5 minutes, I want you to feel great about it, or I want you to hurt with me, but I want you to feel an emotion after that. If I'm doing news and doing news anchoring as well, I want you to be well-informed as well as possible, but to be brought into the story. I want you to be able to stop what you're doing, take a look at the TV, and pay attention to me for that segment. And if I can get you to do that, I've done my job. And so I love that. And did I miss anything, or did I cover everything?
Well, I think basic play-by-play.
Yeah, play-by-play. Oh, my God. Play-by-play is the best. Because it's, again, attaching yourself to a moment. You're being able to bring in a listener who could have watched the whole game, could come in the first quarter, come in the fourth quarter, and you telling them why this game matters. Mm-hmm. And it's the closest thing doing play-by-play that someone who is retired will ever get to being back in the game. So you could feel the energy right there.
Yeah.
And you could allow your voice to be an instrument to be a part of it as well. So that's why I love play-by-play.
It's interesting, Justin. When I first really learned to write, all of us write at some point, but when I really learned how to do it, Somebody told me that the key is, you know, if you're writing a news story or a feature, is it you? I imagine my best friend who would want to know about what I'm writing about, whether it's a personality or a game story or whatever. I sometimes even picture my best friend and say, if I were telling him this story, what would I start with? Then where would I go from there? How would I support that? And what would I whittle it down? And there's basically your inverted pyramid that you learn in journalism school about. You lead with the most important thing and build down from there. I can do that. I can remember, I can picture I never get writer's block because I'll go, okay, now what would I tell this guy? What would I tell somebody? You know, based on how much that person knows, I got to know what my audience is. It's not always my best friend who's just as much of a sports geek as I am, but it's the average person who's tuning in. What would I do with that? Is that kind of how you approach whether it's writing or broadcasting?
100%. I mean, it's a little different because writing, you do have that inverted pyramid, right? Because mm-hmm. you always have to start off with what's the most important, but you also have to think of when it's a little bit different from when you got started, David. Well, now you have people on their phones.
Back when we were etching it in stone, right?
Back in the day. But you think about it now, you have with cell phones and people at work and looking on the internet, you have literally 5 to 10 seconds to get somebody's attention immediately. Right. So the first part of your article has to grab people.
Yeah.
And then you go from there. And there's also a word count that you have to have in your mind too, because unless if somebody's going to sit back and leisurely read your story, honestly, after 250 or 300 words, people are going to start to, you know, tune out.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep that in mind where you really push up the most important information. You push up the most important bite early, and then you go from there. And then you want to wrap it up with your best bite too, or your best quote. So I do that within writing. What I do broadcast is, so we call packages. One of the things that we do, we have about 90 seconds to do our packages. And in my mind, I'm always thinking beginning, middle, end. What is this? What's going on? So I introduce you to a person that you've never met before, or you may have heard before. What's the person or the event? Then, you know, hear from them immediately. And then I want you to feel something of, oh man, what's like the friction in this story? Kind of what's the middle of this part? You know, what's going on? So I may use a but or an and or something like that in order to help out with the friction in the story. Or then, for example, and then in the end, I want to wrap it up. And at the end, you have to remember that you only have 90 seconds to tell this story. So, for example, we had a snowstorm just recently in Colorado, and I was on that and I did a story on that. And so the story was talking about what do you do if a tree hits your car? And in Denver, in the Capitol Hill neighborhood, a lot of cars are parked under these big, humongous trees.
Yeah.
And the problem is you get heavy, wet snow that gets on the branches, and they just snap off and they hit cars that are right below them. And so my thing is, how can I tell this story of what do you do if a branch hits your car and it damages your car? Well, then I go directly to, here's what happened to a person that I met on Friday and I talked to on Friday. And she says, well, it sucks. This happened to my car. Well, this is something that has also happened for the rest of the time here early Friday morning, for example. And so I talk about that friction. Then I bring in the expert on, this is what you need to do. And I take you through certain steps, wrap it up, go back to the next story. And so that's the way that I try to bring people in to stop what they're doing and pay attention.
Sure. And you mentioned something, the fact that you like the camera and, mm-hmm. and that you see things all the time about that. All people have, all Americans at least have the same basic fears. We're afraid of spiders. We're afraid of dying, and we're afraid of speaking in front of a local Rotary Club. Well, one, I'm not afraid of dying. I know where I'm going. I'm ready.
Man,
I'm not suicidal, but I'm ready. But I do not have one ounce of fear of being in public. You know, in our family, when we're having family gatherings and they say sweets for the sweets, they pass me the ham. You're like that you're like that as well. You like being in front of the camera, don't you?
I really do. It's a lot of fun because it's weird because you never know who you're talking to. You never know who who is listening to you. So sometimes when you mess up, you're like, oh boy, I hope there's only like five people watching today.
I hope my English teacher wasn't watching.
Right. And then when you do your best, you're like, man, I hope everybody watched this show, but I did great, you know? But you just have to enjoy yourself. It's funny when I'm in front of the camera, I just feel like I'm talking to my dad. And I'm like, what would my dad need to know about this? What would my dad need to know about this story? A little bit away from sports, but I do like snow coverage or breaking news or whatever. I just think of, okay, what does my dad need to know?
Yeah.
Or what will my dad tell me about what other people should do while they're driving? Well, he will always tell me to go, 15 to 20 minutes, give yourself enough time on the road, go slow.
Yeah.
And don't be stupid on the road. That's exactly what I let people know too.
Yeah.
So it allows me not to talk at people. I'm with you. I'm just giving you advice. Right.
Yeah.
But when I do sports, man, I light up like a Christmas tree because I'm like, I have 3:30. I want you to laugh with me. I want you to pay attention with what's going on. And by the way, since I'm up here, I'm going to tell you the reason why this is so important and why you should pay attention. Hmm. And so I love being in front of the camera.
Yeah. All right. We talked about four different aspects of your journalism career. Many of them, if not all of them, are still ongoing. What's your favorite and why?
Wow. That is tough. Can I say all of them?
No.
Right, I know. If I had to pick one, play-by-play is my absolute favorite, just because you're right at the game again. I mean, even throughout the pandemic, there's not fans per se so much anymore.
Right.
But to be in an area where you're just ad-libbing for 2 hours, 3 hours, to be in that arena is so much fun. And I love doing that. So definitely play-by-play is number one because you're taking people with you in that.
Yeah.
And then TV is second. Easily TV is like, if it's like play-by-play is 1A, doing any type of TV work is 1B, and then radio will be, we'll round it up from there. And I love writing too, but
definitely
that'll be kind of the hierarchy.
So you just, even after I told you you couldn't, you just said all of them.
I did.
All right. Now, as a native of Denver, you're really in your comfort zone. You're doing an area Division II schools games. You're on TV. You're in your comfort zone. Do you want to continue to move up the ladder to bigger markets to make a national footprint? Or do you see yourself staying? I mean, you're a young man still in your 30s. Do you see yourself staying in Denver for your entire career?
No, I want to move up. I have aspirations to be, a name, to follow the Bob Costas of the world, Marv Alberts, those are the guys that I look up to. There's so many other tremendous journalists out there. My passion is to be able to move up. And I think that's what you should, even if you're staying at the local level, you still should have aspirations because it continues to drive. David, one thing I never want to do is to be comfortable. And part of my story of that has to do with, being laid off before, being fired before, and knowing how it feels to have nothing in your pocket. And so, or look at your bank account, you have, $4 in your bank account, which I've had. I never want to be at that point again. So for me, I'm always pushing and always striving for more, striving for better.
All right, you got to make me a promise right now. When you get to be the lead broad, when you replace Jim Nance when he retires another 20 years, you'll remember me. You got to promise me that.
Yeah, 100%. I'll
with you. All right. Well, I've known you for several years now, and I've also known you in many of those roles, and it hasn't been an easy journey for you. You just alluded to it. You've been fired a couple of times. Mm-hmm. How important is it to hang on to a dream?
It's crucial to be able to hang on to a dream. Because I believe Howard Thurman says, he was a mentor to Martin Luther King Jr. He taught him at Boston University. It gives a man the significance of living, a dream does. Hmm. And so for me, I could do other things, but I never really wanted to per se.
Yeah.
My grandfather always tells me this. He says, never have a plan B, just have another plan A. And that's really what journalism is today. It's not about having a plan B. People say, well, you have your fallback plan or whatever. No, just have another plan A. and go after your plan A. Don't be divided in so many other different things. Know what you want to do, stay focused in, and get after it. And, you know, David, it's taken me 10 years just to be able to get on the anchor desk. You know, how many people would stay at it for a decade after disappointments, after being laid off, after being fired, after having to do different roles? I've done that. You know, David, I've done it where I had to throw papers at one point. I've done it where I had to fill up vending machines for a friend just to get by. And so what it's supposed to do, it is supposed to build up more of that fire in you, where you're never satisfied, you never take a step back, and you're always striving to get better every day. And that comes from my athletic background, that comes from hard knocks of life, but also comes with, as we talk about the faith, it also comes back with just wanting to please the Lord in my life. We're not living forever, you know? I only get one shot at this. And at the end of the day, rather than being known as a great journalist, I just want to hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. That's all I want to hear. And that's my motivation every day.
It's interesting. I had not heard that quote that you referred to that was given to Dr. King. That puts his, you know, he's well known for an awful lot of speeches, but he's best known for the I Have a Dream speech. Mm-hmm. That puts that speech in a totally different context, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It makes you understand that, especially for him, and you have to think about Martin Luther King at that time too. I mean, yeah, you're starting to see the notoriety and, you know, he's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize. I believe a year later or that same year, I believe it was 1963 was the I Have a Dream speech.
Maybe a couple years now. Like August of 63.
Yeah.
I was still a young pup.
Yeah. Seriously, still just a young pup. I think honestly, we're at the same age at that time. And that just keeps you going. It keeps you moving. It keeps you growing. It keeps you pushing for him to keep pushing for justice, to keep pushing for African-Americans and the civil rights movement. And so it keeps individuals like myself moving as well, because if he could do something like that, why can I? Why can I not stand up and do the same thing for my community and my family as well?
It's interesting. I want to stay on that subject for a little bit because, you know, until we did this recording, I didn't recognize the significance of the word dream in his speech. But he wasn't, you know, when I think I have a dream, it's like, it'd be great if I could do this. It's kind of haphazard. When he was saying I have a dream in the context that you were talking about earlier, it's like, I am actually longing for, I'm going to work my tail off to get to the point where this is true. It's not, man, it would be nice if this happened. This is what I'm setting out to do, and nothing is going to stop me.
There's a big difference between dreams and fantasies, right? Dreams are something that are attainable. You could grab, you could see, you could literally visualize or place yourself there. Fantasies are like, man, in the Twilight Zone, you know, like they're all over the place.
Yeah.
When someone says truly, like, I have a dream and is really thinking about this, no, this is the way that he saw the world. Or you go to Martin Luther King, he saw the word that way. He saw, like, wait a minute, this is truly a possibility. This is not just something I'm dreaming up. So it should be that way. And in the same way, in broadcasting and journalism, you have to have that same mindset, because the worst thing that you can have is where you just kind of relegate yourself to, well, this is just the reality of the world, so there's nothing else I can do. And again, it stunts your growth. And what it really does is it puts a fire hydrant on your dreams. It puts fire hydrants on your goals. And you just stop striving.
Yeah.
Stop growing. And so that's what I love about just not only Martin Luther King and what he stood for, what he's about, but just dreaming in general. It just keeps you moving forward.
That's great, great perspective. I want to switch gears a little bit, talk about some of the aspects of your career. Television sports, I call it a microwave. You basically got 2 minutes, 3.5 if you got a really generous news director. But, you know, 2 to 3 minutes on a typical newscast to tell all the pertinent information in a city like Denver that's got all four major sports, got area schools. And that, I think that time is shrinking. Is sports as part of television news going to be around in 5 years?
Wow. Wow, that's a great question. In some aspects, it was always be there, but I think it'll be different. If you treat sports as news, it will always be there. If you see sports as that extracurricular, you know, activity, yeah, or kind of yeah. like that elective per se, yeah. then it won't be around. I mean, there are certain areas where they have let sports out of the newscast. But if you consider sports as news and it's important information, it will always be there. And I think it will be, but it's evolving and it's changing, because it used to be you had to wait for the 5, 6, or 10 o'clock in order to get
right.
sports. Like if right. you had no idea who won, you had to wait to get the highlights. Like you had to wait till 10. Now, you know, on your phone, the moment what the score is right now,
yeah.
They also have highlights on YouTube that shows, hey, this is the game. Like in 9 minutes, you can watch highlights of the full game. That's where yeah. more and more people are going to. So what it comes down really to, David, is it comes back down to storytelling, just like what we started with.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a story? Can you go and get into the locker room and get me an exclusive conversation with somebody that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else? Those are the things that's going to keep sports alive on the local portion of the business. So you got to make sure that you're able to do that.
Yeah, because, you know, the highlights are going to show what happened on the field. But for us sports nerds, you know, we want to know why it happened. We want to yeah. know what the reaction was from the people who were participating. You know, I'm in Kansas City, and one of our heroes right now is Salvador Perez. And you know, Salvi is way more fun off the field. You know, I've had the opportunity, not recently because of COVID, but I've had the opportunity to go into the locker room after a game and put my microphone in his face and hear him just, you know, with that big burly laugh, you know, tell stories and stuff like that. People want to know why something happened as much as what happened. And that's the role of a good sports journalist, is to be able to say why.
And David, if I may add, not only the why, but you shouldn't allow somebody on a national level to yeah. tell better stories about what you're doing, right? So if it's the Denver Nuggets or the Denver Broncos, for example, right? No one from a national level should be able to come down and to tell a better story. I mean, they get better access. Don't get me wrong. I understand
right,
that.
Right.
But nobody should be able to come down and tell a better story than what you're doing. You know, no one should do that. Like, you should have that pride in what you do to say, hey, we talk with, you know, Melvin Gordon, you know, running back for the Broncos, or, you know, Courtland Sutton. Let me tell you about tattoos that he has on his shoulders, which are two yeah. Bible verses. Hey, wait, Courtland, tell me about those two Bible verses. And why are those important? Nobody from a national level should be right. able to come down or will come down and do that. So that's the responsibility of you to tell those stories. And again, it brings the audience back in and say, wait a minute, I'm not only looking at this guy on the field for what he does between the lines, but I know something about him off the field too. And this is why I can root for him. Here's another reason why I can root for him.
Yeah. One of my opinions is that Twitter and other social media, as good as it is, as informative as it is, those social media channels have made quick more important than accurate.
Yes.
You agree?
Yes, 100%.
Why is that a problem?
Because everybody wants their analytics to be high, right? So if a news director hires you based off of how many followers you are, then you may put off a couple of different things to have people follow you. Or you may put out a whole lot of, you know, GIFs or whatever, or pictures or whatever, just to have more people follow you. I mean, I've literally have seen that people have been hired based off their following, right? And so it's a good thing in a sense of you could get information out quickly and then you could go more in depth later on, especially as we talked about, right, where you only have 2 minutes or 2.5 minutes on a newscast. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who will put information out there or who are trying to get popular, and the information is wrong. And then you find them backtracking and whatnot. And so there's just a lot of voices out there, and you want to be an accurate, trusted voice rather than be the first one screaming out there.
So what can be done about that? Because I don't see, it's not one of these that's going up and down. It's if you think where we are now is down, it just continues to go down. It's
yeah.
Twitter's not going to say, okay, we've had some fun. Now make sure everything you post is accurate before you post it. They're not going to do that. What can be done to make accurate important again?
It's important from each station alone of understanding that it's not important to be first. It's important to be right. And it's important to be accurate. It's not throwing away everything you learn from journalism school, right? You don't want to throw away your name because you want to get one tweet. You know, you want to be correct on one tweet or something like that. You want to be first on one tweet. But at the same time, it's more important to build up relationships with players, relationships with agents, relationships with general managers, so that when something does happen, you're the first one to report it and you report it accurately and correctly so that you never have to backtrack. But then once you go and post the story, right, or post or tweet it out, then you have a story, then you have a video that comes back with it, right? So those are the different ways of how you're able to use Twitter to your advantage and not just throw something out there and see what sticks.
Yeah. Okay. I want to switch a little bit. As a native of Denver, you're obviously a Broncos fan. You're now covering them. When you and I first met, Peyton Manning was the Broncos quarterback and the Chiefs were always looking up at the Broncos. Things have changed, my friend.
Yes, they have.
How far are the Broncos from competing with the Chiefs and maybe with the Chargers and Justin Herbert? Maybe even, I hate to say this, the one thing that we can agree on is we hate the Raiders. Yeah. How far are the Broncos from competing for the division?
When was the last time you've prayed for the Broncos? When was the last time for them to succeed?
You're supposed to pray for your enemies, but I haven't come around to that one yet. So, don't know.
It's going to take a while. The reality is that if you don't have a quarterback, and you know this when John Elway was there, if you don't have a quarterback that's either just below, on par, or better than what you have in the division, if you don't have the best quarterback in the division, then you're always going to struggle. I mean, there was plenty of years that Kansas City had the number one defense. Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, I mean, Marty Schottenheimer had those young men rolling. And every year, what happened? John Elway and the Broncos, for one reason or another, they'll either find themselves in the Super Bowl or they'll win the division. And I even think back to like 97 when Kansas City, number one seed, had everything rolling. Here comes John Elway.
Yeah, just stop. You know? No, I remember that.
Guys right there.
I remember that.
I see all those things because that's the same pain that Bronco fans are going to feel until they get a quarterback. And that's where it starts and ends from there. And I know Drew Locke is a Kansas City kid, but he was 4-9 last year in his 13 starts and led the NFL in interceptions, tied up with Carson Wentz. So unless if he has a great year three and he's able to turn everything around, then you have to go and find the next guy. And so that's one of the reasons why, personally, but I mean, just again, I do media, that I believe this year the Broncos got to go out and get themselves a quarterback in the first round. Like, either you move up, whatever, but you got to get that guy, not only to just compete with Drew Locke, but to find that guy. And until you find somebody who can compete with Patrick Mahomes, and we know he is on track to be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, but until you find that guy that will give you a chance in the fourth quarter against Patrick Mahomes, it doesn't matter. It matters absolutely nothing. So it's going to take the Broncos a while until they find that guy.
All right, and we're going to air this after the draft comes out, so we will know by the time people are actually hearing this what a prognosticator you are. So we know that Trevor Lawrence is going first. We're pretty confident that Zach Wilson's going second, and then it gets muddy. Some say the 49ers will take Mac Jones. Some say Justin Fields. So. Your prediction, do the Broncos stay at number 9? And two, do they, you know, if not, do they move up or down? And finally, who do they end up with? So let's see how good your predictions are.
Broncos will move up to 4 or 7, and they'll pick a quarterback. It will either be Trey Lance or Justin Fields. Whichever one doesn't get picked up out of the first three, it'll be one of those guys. If the draft goes 1-2-3 at quarterback, which it will be, but if it's 1-2-3 with Mac Jones going to the San Francisco 49ers, I could see the Broncos trading at 7 with Detroit and going to get a quarterback from there. If it's 1-2-3 with Justin Fields being the San Francisco's 49ers pick, the Broncos will move up to 4 and they'll go get Trey Lance.
Wow.
I'm very confident in that.
That was impressive. Yeah. And if that actually comes off that way, I'm going to send you some Kansas City barbecue, because that was really, really impressive. I was expecting just kind of muddying you through it. Oh yeah, they'll get a quarterback and I think they'll move up. You were specific, and that's really good. So I had a question on here. Is Drew Locke the answer? You're saying no.
No, I mean, the reality is that you have to continue to go after the guy till you find the guy. Now, right. Drew Lock, he will start. Like he's going to, unless there's an injury in preseason, he will start the season. And to be very honest, I don't want any of these guys, including Trevor Lawrence, to start for me immediately. I don't want any of those guys to. Yeah. I want him to be able to sit a little bit, understand the game, and then go in there, especially with it now being a 17-game season. But I say Drew Lock starts at least 8 games this year, and if the team is 4-4 or if the team is below 500 at that point, you make the change and you move on from there. I think what a lot of people forget are two things specifically, and one has to do with the coronavirus pandemic. Fans have gotten used to not going to games. Yeah. And so you could sit at home and watch a game and you don't have to go through a line to use the bathroom. You could just get up and there's your beer or there's your soda or whatever. Like you don't have to go and fight through all that. You don't have to fight in the cold or anything like that either. So you got to make sure that you have an exciting enough product on the field for people to spend their money to drive and go and sit down in the seats. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I believe the Broncos will go and get a quarterback. And secondly, let's just call it what it is. Your quarterback tied the NFL for the most interceptions in the league.
Yeah.
And with a 4-9 record. I mean, last year was the year where it was like, is Drew Lock the guy? He was 4-9. What else do you need to see?
Yeah.
Have him start. If he does well, continue on. Great. If he doesn't, you have your backup right there, and let's keep it moving.
All right. I'm going to wrap things up. I've got a few questions that are just first thing off the top of your head. What advice would you give a young journalism student just getting started in his or her career?
Urgency. Be urgent. Don't wait. You don't need any permission from anybody else. Don't wait for somebody to say you need to be on a radio station. Don't wait for somebody to say you need to be on TV. There's individuals who make TikTok videos who are millionaires. So go out and be urgent in what you do and get to know as many people as possible immediately in this business.
I've shared with people as I try and whether it's selling my books or get different people on my podcast. I've had Kevin Harlan. I've had Bill Hancock, Joe Lunardi, Bill Snyder, people. And I've been blessed in my career that I know most of them, but my business motto is don't be afraid to ask. The worst thing that could happen is somebody says no, and you're exactly where you were if you hadn't asked to begin with. So I that's great advice. Yeah. Okay.
Can I add one more to that?
Yeah.
You just hit? We like to say shoot your shot, right? Shoot your shot, man.
Yeah.
You miss absolutely nothing for shooting your shot. And to be honest, if they say no, this is another thing too. If someone says no, that's no for right now. That's not no forever.
Yeah.
So it might be a total different answer a week from now, but just shoot your shot.
Yeah, for sure. All right. You're awful young to be asked for me to be asking you this question, but what is your legacy?
Oh my God. First thing that comes to mind, that I was faithful over famous. I was faithful in what I did, and whatever happens with the fame, hey man, that's on to somebody else, man. My legacy is that I was a faithful worker. That's what I want to be. I want to be a faithful worker who put his best step forward every day.
That's awesome. I asked that question to Bobby Bell, Pro Football Hall of Famer from the Chiefs from the 60s and 70s. And he had one of the best answers ever. He said, I want to live my life so the preacher don't have to lie at my funeral.
I like that.
So yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. That's a good motto to live by. And I always like to let people talk about their family. So go for it.
Well, you know what? I have an amazing wife. Her name is Nikki Adams, a beautiful, beautiful wife. We've been married for 4.5 years.
I've seen her picture, and you're right. She's beautiful.
Gorgeous. I still have no idea how.
You outpunted your coverage, my friend.
Yes, sir. Outplayed it, definitely. I will say this, number one, about her. And, you know, we always talk about finding a woman of virtue, finding a woman who wants to stick with you. She married me, mind you, David, married me, not dated me, went to the altar and married me when I was filling up vending machines and when I was throwing newspapers. And she saw that I had a work ethic and I had a dream. And as a woman who has a master's degree, who's an executive director of childcare licensing in Colorado, she decided to marry me. And now look at the fruits of that. And so I am forever grateful for her, not just because of her beauty, not just because she's a tremendous mother and a great parent, but she's an awesome friend, man. And I can't thank her enough for, she took a risk on me. And I'm always grateful for her. And just beautiful, man. I don't know if I mentioned that, David, but she's beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a 2-year-old son who is growing like a weed. It is crazy. I'm seeing things that my dad used to say is like, my God, son, you've gotten big. Well, my son is just ridiculous. And he talks a lot too. I don't understand a word he says.
And you don't know where he gets that.
Right, exactly. But he does that. So my mom and dad, they're still living. Thank the Lord for that. And so they live just 20 minutes away, and my in-laws live 20 minutes away in the other direction too. And so it's great to have the support, great to have the family here as well. So I'm grateful and love them. And I have a younger sister and an older brother. And being a middle child, I was protected from a lot of different things, but I'm grateful because they've helped shape me to be who I am today.
Joe Lenardi told my wife, when he was in my house, we were working on a book together, and he told my wife, he was asking her questions like, what do you think of David's writing career, stuff like that. And she gave him the answers you would expect. And he said, well, like my dad used to tell me, behind every successful man is a surprised woman.
That's it.
So, all right. I have seen videos of your son on Facebook, you teaching, and maybe it was just last year, you teaching your son how to celebrate a touchdown. How did that go?
It was awesome. So the idea was, I was watching the Broncos play the New England Patriots, and the Broncos couldn't get in the end zone. They won the game. It was one of the few wins they had, and they just couldn't get in the end zone. And so this is how my mind works. As I'm sitting down, I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if I have to tell my son, or I could teach my son how to get into the end zone so that guys who get paid millions of dollars can learn how to do so. They could just watch him. And so I was like, all right, let's do it. So we go out to the field. And before I go out there, I'm like, what is an outfit that could be convincing that would just make it hilarious when you first see me? And I refereed, like 10-year-old basketball or whatever. And so I still had the outfit right there. And I was like, yes. I had the full outfit. I had the refereeing hat and everything. So I went out there and we did the video, and the way it came out was just hilarious. My wife played a part too. My favorite part of the whole video, by the way, was me spiking his bottle. And so he was 18 months at the time and just barely learning how to walk. And so I grabbed the bottle and I spiked it, and it goes all over the place. And we had two different bottles, and I took the bottle out of his mouth and I spiked it. And I just remember my wife saying, all right, that's funny, great job, but let's not waste any more milk. And I was like, okay, we won't waste any more milk. But it came over well, and I was glad that a lot of people had a lot of fun with it.
So that video that I saw on Facebook, that was actually on the Denver News.
Yeah, we did it on the news. And actually, here's another part to it too. And this is just, again, goes back to my personality. At that time, we had a lot of wildfires that were going on in Colorado. We've actually had three of the biggest wildfires in Colorado history that were happening. And so it was a really somber time, because one in Grand Junction, one just north of Denver. And so it was just a lot of things were going on. And I remember walking into the newsroom and I was like, do I really want to do this segment when, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on? And at the end, I was like, this is who I am, man. I love having fun and I love putting a smile on somebody's face. And if for 30 seconds, a smile on your face makes you forget about the bad news that's happened or that you just saw, that means the world to me. So that's where the video came from.
All right. And last question for you. Are you going to be covering him someday in the pros? Is he an athlete?
I hope so, man. He is. That kid is strong. David, it is crazy. My wife and I were working out, just this past weekend. And this kid is already picking up weights. And I mean, like, we have this little plastic weights. It's like 3 pounders, and he's picking them up and like putting them in front of me. I'm like, dude, you're going to be amazing. So I hope he does. But I do know this, David, that if he doesn't get a chance to play football or play professionally, he's going to do all right in life because he has the looks of his mom, but he has the swag of his daddy. So he's going to be all right.
Great answer. Great answer. Well, Justin, it is always fun to catch up with you. Next time I'm in Denver, we'll definitely get together for dinner.
David, anytime you need me, please give me a call. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Sports Connections with David Smale. Make sure to subscribe, follow, and rate the show from your favorite podcast platform. You can learn more about David Smale and his work by visiting davidsmalebooks.com. Don't forget to join us weekly for new episodes. Until next time.